You know, in a way, you'd think at a time when there's a pandemic, when the economy is being shut down, you'd expect a stock market crash. And instead, what we've seen is generally kind of rises across the board. And so I think that what that touches on is the fact that, you know, macro policy has had this effect of increasing the value of wealth of the stuff that people own.
With so many businesses closing their doors, one could assume that billionaires who have profited did so due to the virus. After all, the majority of the world's top 10 billionaires are involved in the tech industry. And with lockdowns in full swing across the world, the likes of Amazon and Microsoft have thrived as they deliver goods around towns and cities, avoiding people leaving their homes and connecting people via the likes of Zoom and WhatsApp. However, the reality is far from the scenario just mentioned. In fact, those seeing billions in profits did so by betting on the recovery of global stock markets. This not only boosted the wealth of many billionaires, but also created a record number of new ones. During the first lockdown in early 2020, stocks and share prices were plummeting. This not only allowed those super rich investors to buy stocks at super low prices, it also saw their own companies affected. However, as the only group of people in the world able to risk such large amounts of money, the classic tactic of buy low and sell high saw the vast majority of profits hit the bank accounts of the rich. Furthermore, their own company stocks and shares also surged in prices, with Elon Musk's Tesla being a fine example as its share prices flew up. However, the opposite end of the scale saw many people falling into poverty. For example, 8 million extra people were recorded in the US. Of these, the black and ethnic minority communities were worst affected, with 5.4% more on average falling into the poverty bracket. What now remains to be seen is whether Joe Biden's rescue plan will help the poor get back on their feet. Yet the sums of money proposed is still much less than the net worth of the American billionaires, showing that even the state is struggling to compete with the huge sums of money circulating in the hands of a very select few.
Joining me in the studio is current affairs and impact analyst Mahan Abedin. Mahan, welcome. We also have Baron Prem Sika of Basildon, who is an emeritus professor of accounting at Essex University and a member of the British House of Lords. Okay, Professor, many thanks for being with us on Economic Divide. First up, the global pandemic. It has seen many people succumb both physically and financially to this virus, yet large multinational company owners at Amazon, Tesla, and Microsoft have seen their wealth increased in the billions. Do you think this is the time, the right time, for such companies to invest the huge profits into greater causes, for example, distributing the vaccines to global South countries in poverty, as an example?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on your program. Yes, what we have seen is that ordinary people's lives have been decimated by COVID pandemic. It is generally the poor and the poor and the less well-off who've been most affected. And they continue to suffer while, as you rightly say, large multinational companies continue to make profits. Well, in principle, we could expect them, as it were, to provide free vaccine to their workers and to their consumers, but that is not what they are going to do. So the state must act, and the state must act by ensuring that these organizations pay the taxes which they should be paying rather than avoiding them, and that would actually fund the vaccine program.
All right, Mahan, we have seen the huge profits that are being made by the likes of Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos. Do you think that the conditions set forth by the COVID-19 pandemic have actually played into their hands, and this being yet another case of the rich profiting of the misery of others?
In a nutshell, yes, but I think to be fair, these big corporations, the multinationals, and the fabulously wealthy people behind them, they're always well positioned to benefit from these type of events, be they pandemics, big natural disaster, a huge global war perhaps. They're well positioned to benefit because, you know, the macroeconomic and microeconomic settings really suits them. What happened during the COVID-19 pandemic? A lot of small to medium-sized businesses went bust. So that inevitably expands the market share for the big corporations. Also, buying patterns on the part of individuals changes. People couldn't go out, for instance, and governments really encouraged people to stay in, especially in Western Europe and North America. So people tended to do more and more online shopping. And that also benefited the big corporations at the expense of the small firms in the high street. Now, I think is a little bit even more sinister than that, because what we've seen during this pandemic in the past year is that key individuals, you know, some of the richest people on the planet, Bill Gates, for instance, the founder of Microsoft, really pushing this vaccination program in a very aggressive way. Now, I'd hate to dabble into conspiracy theories, but you know, you do begin to wonder about whether there's ulterior motives. In the UK, you had Tony Blair, an infamous prime minister for 10 years, responsible for Iraq War and all the atrocities, saying, you know, people need COVID passports to travel. So, you know, on the face of it, these people appear altruistic, but from their past behavior, we know that they are, you know, incredibly selfish people. So you do begin to wonder about possible ulterior motives.
Of course. Thank you. We appreciate that. Mahan Abedin there. And thank you to Baransika. We'll be seeing them both again later in the show. Let's now take a look at our second report that examines how the ultra-rich elite are able to stay rich using legal loopholes and whether government should crack down on such schemes.
When one thinks of tax avoidance and evasion, it's easy to think about the numerous tax havens around the world, from Monaco in the south of France to the ultra-niche islands in the Caribbean, all offering the richest people in the world a safe and secure place to store their cash and business dealings away from prying eyes. Recent events have shown just how big a scale the problem is, demonstrated in detail through leaked papers such as the FinCEN files and the Panama Papers, which not only named and shamed some of the rich and famous who had taken advantage of the system, but also embroiled several heads of states from around the world, showing that the problem stems from the bottom to the very top. However, there's a much more sinister way of avoiding taxes, and a way that on the surface, if used correctly and sensibly, will no doubt benefit millions of people around the world. In fact, many examples of philanthropy exist and have proven this. Take, for example, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which has to date given money to those in poverty, those in need of education, and a host of vaccines, essentially eradicating polio through the foundation. However, there's a dark side and abuse of the philanthropy system, namely the fact that so many of the world's richest people use philanthropy to avoid paying taxes, as you don't have to pay taxes on the parts of your income that you donate. Tax avoidance schemes, according to CNBC, could cost the US alone as much as $5 trillion over the next decade, and this sum would come from only the top 1% of taxpayers. Yet it seems the problem is twofold. Not only are the companies and individuals involved finding ways to avoid the taxman, but the taxman himself is not performing, with only 3% of the richest people in the US being audited by the IRS. With so many people around the world avoiding paying tax on a monumental scale, should the governments and authorities not be doing more to stop this problem?
Now looking at, you know, for further revenue, governments are going to be thinking, well, where is the next place we're going to get money? And they're often not going to be able to just repeat what they did last time, whether that was increasing tax or taxes on the sort of majority of the population, or whether that was cutting back on the state. And so I think, you know, one natural area to kind of clamp down on is some of these reliefs and loopholes. But again, I think it's worth remembering, you know, often this idea of describing it as a loophole or relief is a way of a politician saying, you know, there is this problem here and it's somehow being used unreasonably, and that's fine. But then they should go, you know, politicians then have it within their gift to change those things.
All right, back in the studio with Mahan Abedin and Professor Sika. Professor, let me start with you. It seems that the richest people and companies around the world have found ways to exploit taxes through loopholes and investment schemes, many of them preferring fines, which often amount to less than the profits being made. You pointed that out. Should there be then a tougher approach on measures finding this by the government and the authorities?
Well, these companies are only able to avoid taxes because the governments let them. Governments can enact tougher laws, but they don't, because the big corporations and richer people are able to fund political parties, and in a sense they are not making donations. What they are making is an investment, and the return on that investment is that they have become a law unto themselves. They avoid taxes. They engage in all kind of artificial profit-shifting tax schemes. They concoct transactions which have absolutely no economic substance. And many of these companies are hiding their profits in what are commonly called British Crown dependencies and overseas territories. Places like Jersey, Guernsey, Gibraltar, Isle of Man, and many others. So the British government can deal with these companies, these small islands, so can other countries too. But actually the political will is not there, because our political system is actually inept. It works against the interests of ordinary people. So we have a position in the UK at the moment where some of the poorest people are paying 40%, 42% of their total income in direct and indirect taxes, compared to the rich people who are paying about 32-34% of their total income in taxes. That is immoral, and that must be addressed.
Okay, Mohan, looking at the opposite end of the spectrum here, whilst the rich are getting richer, the poor actually falling deeper into poverty. Maybe that's one of the reasons, or the taxes, the way that it's being exercised on them. Do you think that the wealth gap is actually widening and deepening because the rich are allowed to exploit these loopholes like taxes? And how can the gap be bridged then in the near future?
Again, in a nutshell, yes. And look, the gap cannot be bridged because, as your guest correctly pointed out, the political will isn't there. Now, we know that the political systems in Western Europe, particularly in the UK, and also in North America, they are very corrupt.
Okay, thank you very much for that. Welcome back to Economic Divide with me, Kavita Athwaye. Time now to take a deeper look into this week's topic in our in-depth section. The collective wealth of all U.S.-based billionaires increased by just over $1.1 trillion since mid-March of 2020. Now, that is a near 40% increase in wealth during a period of national emergency. The huge sum of money to pay for the relief of working families in the U.S. contained in the $1.9 trillion coronavirus package proposed by U.S. President Joe Biden. With the combined fortune of U.S.'s 660 billionaires in January of 2021 was around $4.1 trillion. That's up some 38.6% year-on-year. However, it is the fact that some 46 new billionaires were formed in the U.S. during the height of the COVID-19 pandemic that really raises the eyebrows as to, well, how that could have come from 614 people prior to the outbreak. Looking at the opposite end of the scale, ordinary Americans have not fared as well as the billionaires. According to the Department of Labor, over 73 million people lost their jobs during the pandemic, with 16 million people collecting unemployment checks. Unlike the likes of Amazon and Tesla, some 100,000 businesses also permanently closed during the pandemic. Now, things did not end there. According to the Economic Policy Institute, some 12 million workers also lost their employer-sponsored health insurance, whilst the Center of Budget and Policy Priorities stated that 29 million American adults reported their households did not have enough food to eat, with 12 million children going hungry as incomes dried up and mouths could no longer be fed. Let's take a look at our final report, which studies why, during the toughest of times, governments are still forking out billions to private companies, once again putting cash into the pockets of the rich.
There's no doubting the notion that the state and private corporations live and work hand in hand. In fact, it's the very backbone of capitalism that allows private enterprise. On many occasions, the state needs to use private companies in order to fulfill its needs, be it through transport, education, infrastructure, or more. The relationship goes hand in glove in order for a state to operate and provide the facilities that citizens are entitled to enjoy. However, there are occasions when the relationship between states and private sectors could be questioned, particularly when it comes to the state forking out multi-million dollar contracts to companies during a time when spending and priorities should be stricter than ever.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the context of the pandemic, the issue has really been sort of do what works best when it's possible. So, I mean, in the UK, for example, you know, the NHS has been heavily involved in the rolling out of the vaccine, and that's been really important. You know, using the state and the capacity that we already have in the UK to do that has been really, really useful. But at the same time, transporting these sort of ultra-cold vaccines around the place, you know, to keep them at minus 80 or whatever it is, you know, the government contracted Boots and Superdrug to be able to use their, freezer lorries to take stuff around. And that's a sensible use of public money spent moving into private hands, but where that's where the capacity is to go ahead and move stuff around.
One such example is a recent contract won by billionaire Elon Musk and his SpaceX company. The US Space Development Agency, run by the US military and hence a government entity, has recently tendered a contract of $150 million for SpaceX to launch 28 satellites on behalf of the Pentagon. As recently as this month, NASA has also selected SpaceX to launch an astrophysics mission, once again seeing Musk's company earn a tidy $98.8 million for the honour, raising the question as to just whether such spending in times of such crisis can be warranted, as well as asking whether Musk is being favoured in the deals taking place. In total, Musk's various companies, ranging from Tesla, SpaceX and SolarCity Corp, have benefited from just under $5 billion of government support, a figure that seems to highlight a common factor between governments and multi-billion dollar enterprises.
Joining me back in the studio for the final time in this episode is current affairs and impact analyst Mohan Abedin, and we also have Baron Prem Sika, Emeritus Professor of Accounting from Essex University. Gentlemen, welcome back. Okay, Professor, my last question. Why some companies are earning multi-million dollar contracts with the governments? We can mention as an example Elon Musk, SpaceX being one example, and hence raising the question as to whether governments around the world should consider other priorities before funding private individuals and companies, particularly during the ongoing pandemic.
I think you just put your finger on one of the biggest fictions in the Western world, this claim that we have so-called free markets. These free markets are funded by the state, not only through various contracts for private companies, but also through subsidies and the provision of social infrastructure, roads, railways, healthcare for employees, education for everybody, and at the end, the corporations benefit. So I think the balance at the moment that we have in our societies about private and public spheres is incorrect, and it is wrong, and it is enabling some to make mega profits. And then you find the companies which are benefiting, and you mentioned Apple, Microsoft, many others, they then decide to dodge taxes. In other words, they refuse to put something back into the pot, the very pot which has enabled them to flourish and make even more profits. But I think ordinary people are more and more sensitized now to tax avoidance, and they are demanding change. And the governments should listen, but at the moment they are not listening. But that call for social justice will get louder and louder, because in the post-COVID world, we need to rebuild our society on principles of social justice. We can't go back to the world which existed before, where millions of people are increasingly barely surviving, while the number of billionaires who are exploiting society and those people is increasing.
All right. Many thanks to you, Professor Prem Sika. It's been a pleasure having you on this program.
Well, thank you for speaking to me, and it's been a great pleasure to be on your program.
Very well. Well, if you'd like to know more about corporate tax avoidance, the banking empire, and secret offshore wealth funds, be sure to check out The Spider's Web, Britain's Second Empire documentary on YouTube, which explores the issue and in which Professor Prem Sika features in. Okay, Mohan, my final question now to you. As we know, many of the richest people in the world have direct links to the government. We've been saying that, either through being part donors or through being involved in the government through some kind of medium. Is there enough transparency when it comes to allocating government contracts, for example, or are they likely chosen even before they are offered to the tender?
No, there isn't. But I'd just like to go back to something your guest said, because he's not the only one to echo this thought that we need to have this great reset after the pandemic is over. Start afresh. This is an opportunity for change. In principle, that sounds nice, but it's just not going to happen. You know, people are going to go back to the old ways. There isn't sufficient will. Nowhere near the will that's required to reset the system. And I think the Western world, in terms of how its economy is configured and how the associated politics is run, is too deeply entrenched for any great reformation. It's just not going to happen.
Very well. Thank you very much for that, Mohan Abedin, current affairs and impact analyst. We also like to thank Professor Baron Prem Sika. There's no doubt that money makes money. This has proven to be true more than ever as the ultra-rich become even richer during times of hardship. Whilst at the opposite end of the economic ladder, poverty is on the rise across the poorest deciles of society. Yet there also seems to be an unfair advantage. The recent purchase of $1.5 billion of Bitcoin by Elon Musk saw the value of the cryptocurrency surge to a record high of over $44,000 each, simply because of Musk's endorsement of the currency. Could this extreme power hence be adding to the wealth of those able to perform such acts? Yet it seems that very little is being done to stop wealthy individuals getting richer, with governments also in on the act of lining the pockets of Musk, Bezos, and more, hence seeing many enjoy double jackpot profits for their companies and for themselves. That's all the time we have for week's show. On behalf of myself, Kovit Tahway, and the whole team here on Economic Divide, stay safe.
With you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Even as Texas struggled to restore electricity and water over the past week, signs of the risk posed by increasingly extreme weather to America's aging infrastructure were cropping up across the country. The week's continent-spanning winter storms triggered blackouts in Texas, Oklahoma, Mississippi, and several other states. One-third of oil production in the nation was halted. Drinking water systems in Ohio were knocked offline. Road networks nationwide were paralyzed. And vaccination efforts in 20 states were disrupted. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalist Christopher Flavelle, Brad Plummer, and Hiroku Tabuchi. The piece is titled Texas Blackouts Point to Coast-to-Coast Crises Waiting to Happen. Stay with us for more. Even as Texas struggled to restore electricity and water supplies over the past week, signs of the risk posed by increasingly extreme weather to America's aging infrastructure were cropping up across the country. The week's continent-spanning winter storms triggered blackouts in Texas, Oklahoma, Mississippi, and several other states. One-third of oil production in the nation was halted. Drinking water systems in Ohio were knocked offline. Road networks nationwide were paralyzed, and vaccination efforts in 20 states were disrupted. The crisis carries a profound warning. As climate change brings more frequent and intense storms, floods, heat waves, wildfires, and other extreme events, it is placing growing stress on the foundations of America's economy. Its network of roads and railways, drinking water systems, power plants, electrical grids, industrial waste sites, and even homes. Failures in just one sector can set off a domino effect of breakdowns in hard-to-predict ways. Much of this infrastructure was built decades ago, under the expectation that the environment around it would remain stable, or at least fluctuate within predictable bounds. Now climate change is upending that assumption. "We are colliding with a future of extremes," said Alice Hill, who oversaw planning for climate risks on the National Security Council during the Obama administration. "We base all our choices about risk management on what's occurred in the past, and that is no longer a safe guide." While it's not always possible to say precisely how global warming influenced any one particular storm, scientists say an overall rise in extreme weather creates sweeping new risks. Sewer systems are overflowing more often as powerful rainstorms exceed their design capacity. Coastal homes and highways are collapsing as intensified runoff erodes cliffs. Coal ash, the toxic residue produced by coal-burning plants, is spilling into rivers as floods overwhelm barriers meant to hold it back. Homes once beyond the reach of wildfires are burning in blazes they were never designed to withstand. Problems like these often reflect an inclination of governments to spend as little money as possible, said Shalini Vaihala, a former Obama administration official who now advises cities on meeting climate threats. She said it's hard to persuade taxpayers to spend extra money to guard against disasters that seem unlikely. But climate change flips that logic, making inaction far costlier. Shalini Vaihala says, "The argument I would make is we can't afford not to, because we're absorbing the costs." Adding, "After disasters strike, we're spending poorly." The Biden administration has talked extensively about climate change, particularly the need to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and create jobs in renewable energies. But it has spent less time discussing how to manage the growing effects of climate change, facing criticism from experts for not appointing more people who focus on climate resilience. "I'm extremely concerned by the lack of emergency management expertise reflected in Biden's climate team," says Samantha Montano, an assistant professor at the Massachusetts Maritime Academy who focuses on disaster policy. Samantha Montano added, "There's an urgency here that still is not being reflected." A White House spokesman, Vedant Patel, said in a statement, "Building resilient and sustainable infrastructure that can withstand extreme weather and a changing climate will play an integral role in creating millions of good-paying union jobs, whilst cutting greenhouse gas emissions." And while President Joe Biden has called for a major push to refurbish and upgrade the nation's infrastructure, getting a closely divided Congress to spend hundreds of billions of dollars, if not trillions of dollars, will be a major challenge. Heightening the cost to society, disruptions can disproportionately affect lower-income households and other vulnerable groups, including older people or those with limited English. "All these issues are converging," said Robert Bullard, a professor at Texas Southern University who studies wealth and racial disparities relating to the environment. And there's simply no place in this country that's not going to have to deal with climate change, Robert Bullard added. In September, when a southern storm dumped a record of more than 2 inches of water on Washington in less than 75 minutes, the result wasn't just widespread flooding, but also raw sewage rushing into hundreds of homes. Washington, like many other cities in the Northeast and Midwest, relies on what's called a combined sewer overflow system. A downpour overwhelms storm drains along the street. They are built to overflow into the pipes that carry raw sewage. But if there's too much pressure, sewage can be pushed backwards into people's homes, where the forces can send it erupting from toilets and shower drains. This is what happened in Washington. The city's system was built in the late 1800s. Now climate change is straining an already outdated design. Washington, D.C. Water, the local utility, is spending billions of dollars so that the system can hold more sewage. We're sort of in uncharted territory, said Vincent Morris, a utility spokesman. The challenge of managing and taming the nation's water supplies, whether in streets and homes or in vast rivers and watersheds, is growing increasingly complex as storms intensify. Last May, rainfall and flooding breached two dams in central Michigan, forcing thousands of residents to flee their homes and threatening a chemical complex and toxic waste cleanup site. Experts warned it was unlikely to be the last such failure. Many of the country's 90,000 dams were built decades ago and were already in dire need of repairs. Now climate change poses an additional threat, bringing heavier downpours to parts of the country and raising the odds that some dams could be overwhelmed by more water than they were designed to handle. One recent study found that most of California's biggest dams were at increased risk of failure as global warming advances. In recent years, dam safety officials have begun grappling with the dangers. Colorado, for instance, now requires dam builders to take into account the risk of increased atmospheric moisture driven by climate change as they plan for worst-case flooding scenarios. But nationwide, there remains a backlog of thousands of older dams that still need to be rehabilitated or upgraded. The price tag could ultimately stretch to more than $70 billion. Whenever we study dam failures, we often find there was a lot of complacency beforehand, according to Bill McCormick, president of the Association of State Dam Safety Officials. But given that failures can have catastrophic consequences, we really can't afford to be complacent. If the Texas blackouts exposed one state's poor planning, they also provide a warning for the nation. Climate change threatens virtually every aspect of electricity grids that aren't always designed to handle increasingly severe weather. The vulnerabilities show up in power lines, in natural gas plants, in nuclear reactors, and myriad other systems. Higher storm surges can knock out coastal power infrastructure. Deeper droughts can reduce water supplies for hydroelectric dams. Severe heat waves can reduce the efficiency of fossil fuel generators, transmission lines, and even solar panels at precisely the moment that demand soars because everyone cranks up their air conditioning. Climate hazards can also combine in new and unforeseen ways. In California, for example, Pacific Gas and Electric has had to shut off electricity to thousands of people during exceptionally dangerous wildfire seasons. The reason? Downed power lines can spark huge wildfires in dry vegetation. Then, during a record hot August last year, several of the state's natural gas plants malfunctioned in the heat, just as demand was spiking, contributing to blackouts. We have to get better at understanding these compound impacts, said Michael Craig, an expert in energy systems at the University of Michigan, who recently led a study looking at how rising summer temperatures in Texas could strain the national grid in unexpected ways. It's an incredibly complex problem to plan for. Some utilities are taking notice. After Superstorm Sandy in 2012 knocked out power lines for 8.7 million customers, utilities in New York and New Jersey invested billions of dollars in flood walls, submersible equipment, and other technology to reduce the risk of failures. Last month, New York's Con Edison said it would incorporate climate projections into its planning. As freezing temperatures struck Texas this week, a glitch at one of two reactors at a South Texas nuclear plant, which serves 2 million homes, triggered a shutdown of the system. The cause? Sensing lines connected to the plant's water pumps had frozen, according to Victor Driggs, a spokesman for the Federal Nuclear Regulatory Agency, NRA. It's also common for extreme heat to disrupt nuclear power. The issue is that the water used to cool reactors can become too warm to use, forcing shutdowns. Flooding is another risk. After a tsunami led to several meltdowns at Japan's Fukushima Daiichi power plant in 2011, the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission, NRC, told the 60 or so working nuclear plants in the United States, many decades old, to evaluate their flood risk to account for climate change. 90% showed at least one type of flood risk that exceeded what the plant was designed to handle. The greatest risk came from heavy rain and snowfall exceeding the design parameters at 53 nuclear plants. Scott Burnell, a Nuclear Regulatory Commission NRC spokesman, said in a statement, "The NRC continues to conclude, based on the staff's review of detailed analyses, that all U.S. nuclear power plants can appropriately deal with potential flooding events, including the effects of climate change, and remain safe."
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islam ID. Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
By the first verse of the Holy Quran, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Allah will bless you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Protect you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Help you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
So ask His blessings.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
His protection.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
His help.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, brothers and sisters, other life forms. You are listening to Youth Station, only on IRIB English Radio. I am your humble host and friend, I hope, Zainab.
I'm actually really humble.
Lies.
I'm Mehdi. I'm also here trying to cope up with the situation. The virus, I mean.
Sure. Sure, that's what you meant. Talking about the virus thing.
Which is a global thing.
But some countries are more affected than the other.
Yeah, they are, yeah. Countries like North Korea aren't, are they?
Well,
there's something special about this country, isn't it?
The country we're
North Korea.
In. Oh.
North Korea.
Why?
Do you know if it's infected with corona or not?
No.
It shouldn't be, because it doesn't allow anyone to enter.
Awesome.
And doesn't allow anyone to leave and stuff like that. Is that awesome?
Yeah, I think it's great.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I really do.
You're not allowed to leave the country. You're not allowed to visit the country. And you're not allowed to go around as a tourist, as a free person. You're constantly under surveillance.
So?
Okay.
Yeah, I've got
but
nothing to say.
But back to the COVID thing, a lot of us have been struggling and going through a lot of hardships, even tragedies due to the COVID. Yes, I just pulled a...
Yeah, you did. Anyway, go on. Nice deal.
The question we're going to be discussing today is, how can we deal with anger or sadness or frustration or confusion or boredom that's caused by the Ronas, the COVID-19, and the state of lockdown?
I think submission is the key.
Definitely.
Sort of. Right.
Just being at peace with the state of the world. I mean, no one who ever tried to run away from something inevitable ever found that peace. Do you remember the movie Time Machine?
No. What happens?
So it's a period movie, and I think it was made a kajillion years ago. And the guy who plays in it, his name is Guy. Guy plays in it. Guy something. Guy Pierce? Guy something. I don't know. He falls in love, and then with this wonderful woman, his fiancée, she's gorgeous, she's intelligent, she's funny, she's caring, da 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 da. And then she dies. I know.
Isn't that funny?
Anyway, and then, bam, she dies. He is distraught and depressed and distressed, and he builds a time machine to bring back his sweetheart, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he travels back in time. He brings her back, I mean, to a time before she dies. She dies in front of the flower store first time. He goes, an hour before she dies, he tries to, navigate his way and dodge every possibility that would lead them to that flower store to prevent her death.
Mm-hmm.
And as he is taking a route, I think, I don't remember, I watched it a long time ago. As he was taking a route to prevent going to avoid the flower store, his girl gets run over by a carriage.
Wow. I rate these writers. Is the director the same as the writer? No, right? The person who writes the movie.
Yeah.
I rate these people because they've got this view of the world, such writers. For example, you remind me of another movie, I don't remember the name, that this person realizes that his family, the men in the family, they can travel in time, but just...
About Time.
About Time.
I love that movie.
The message is incredible.
It is.
The last message is incredible. Make the most of whatever you have. You don't need to relive it, So while we are... Right, we have to be sad. We have to pray for those that we've lost. But
and those who are suffering.
Yeah, currently, you're right.
I think religious and spirituality plays a huge role.
So they were religious.
Yeah, totally. Of course, hello. I know, it's not like me to have good, pious, religious friends.
No, it's not actually normal to have a set of friends and that's it, What I mean is they got over it for themselves,
No, they
right?
didn't get over it at all. They coped with it. They're still trying to figure out how to navigate their way around, the state of things. And they compromise, I think, here and there. But I really believe that spirituality and religion played a huge role in grounding them,
So you think that whatever goes on, for example, I'm emotionally connected to people and I see them dying. Many people die every day. It was lower down now, but at its peak it was thousands, right?
Yeah.
So you're saying that that's the way to deal with it and that's the only sole way to deal with it.
Is there, by dealing with it, do you mean preventing those deaths?
No.
Is it even possible?
No, it's not.
It's not.
No.
So dealing with, yes, I really do believe that religion is the only way to deal with it. If it's taken out of context, it could be very inconsiderate. But at the end of the day, we have to believe that we're all bound for the grave. Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. We are from God and to God we will return. Right? So one day it's the pandemic, one day it's a car accident.
my Lord, show me right from wrong. Give me light, make me strong. I know the road is long. Make me strong. Sometimes it just gets too much. I feel that I've lost touch. I know the road is long. Make me strong.
So my point is, we're all going to die at the end of the day, bro. But right. if we settle with that as the truest truth, like Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam has said, and if we embrace it, and if we just keep reminding ourselves, if we live life the Islamic way that tells us not to cower away from death, tells us to embrace death, tells us that it's the truest truth, tells us that it's going to find us no matter where we are. We're going to be careful in a state of pandemic, but we're still going to be like, Alhamdulillah ala kulli hal. If it's my father, if it's my neighbor's father, if it's my colleague's father, if it's, you know, a stranger's father. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I sort of do.
But
isn't it natural for someone to suffer mentally, you know? It's
of course.
Yeah, so
I'm not saying someone dies and, you know, you just go sip your chai.
Right, so one point, how many Muslims do we have in the world? 1.7 billion, right? What about the people who are not Muslims, right? What do they do? There are people who are not Muslims, not religious, but they've coped well with the pandemic, right?
Yeah.
What do you think they did?
I think, again, they embraced life for more than...
So if I conclude correctly...
More than what it is, yeah.
What you're saying is by religion, you mean accepting the truth. Right.
Yeah, sure.
No, because these people are not religious at all. For example, they might be atheists for all we know. But they're
still spiritual, quote unquote.
Yeah, there's this thing that's going on recently, right? Gnostics.
And I don't necessarily I think it's a bad thing.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying. We're going to go off the topic if we get into it.
How are you coping with the pandemic, if coping at all?
Great.
Guys, you should see the level of sarcasm on his face. His left eye was twitching. It had a sudden nervous spasm when he said great.
It's the most beautiful thing that happened to me. Anyway.
You're a horrible liar. You have a baby, right?
Yeah.
How old is she, if I may ask?
A little younger than 2 years old.
How's she coping with the pandemic?
She has no idea what's going on.
Really? Does she not want to go out? Yes, she does.
She goes out to the yard and stuff like that, plays around, but she doesn't realize that there's a world outside the yard.
All right, makes sense.
It should be easy.
Are you going crazy?
I was gonna. I was wearing the mask and stuff like that. I was doing the things that I was usually doing, so it wasn't much of a difference. Yeah, and when it comes to lessons and stuff like that, that was the best thing that could happen, you know.
Online classes.
Yeah.
Right.
So in that sense, perfect for me.
Is your wife coping okay?
Initially, it was a bit tough for her. Definitely. But then we decided that, you know, she should just join me on the wagon and just go on, you know. So she started going out to her friends and stuff like that, wearing a mask, and, you know. So, yeah, she pretty much got used to it. I was talking about people accepting that this is the truth, is it?
Yeah, this is the truth.
Right. So as a person who does not believe in an afterlife, the least he could do or they could do is that they submit, right, to the truth. Being worried or being harsh on ourselves is not going to change the fact that, you know, we are headed towards that very thing that we're sad about.
Whose fault is this? I mean, sure, there are people, absolute scumbags, who are going to milk this situation for their own benefits and, I don't know, hoard toilet paper or masks or the stockholders that are just getting richer and richer, the billionaires that are becoming cajillionaires because of the state of pandemic or the Amazon or whatever. There's still going to be those people, right, who are going to exploit the situation and people's struggle in order to fill their pockets. But at the end of the day, like you said, you know, we just have to make the best of the situation we have. The situation we have is being in a state of lockdown, no longer being able to interact with our friends, no longer being able to go out and have fun, and even losing some loved ones, We just have to process that and try to analyze and see what am I supposed to learn from this. Mm-hmm. But then again, it's really easy for me and you to say we didn't lose our job, we didn't lose our house, we didn't lose someone really significant to us. I lost a lot of friends,
to be honest.
I think
also talking about it is also something that we need, you know. Keeping it inside is actually...
Yeah, just keep talking about it, normalize it, create that window for people to vent.
And mm-hmm. I was talking about people actually venting it out. You know,
yeah.
They should actually do that. Some people actually see it as a sign of weakness, but it actually isn't. You know, you're a natural human being. There's no reason or logical reason for you to put out this face that you don't need, right? And just let it out, you know. Talk to it.
Oh, I would also suggest to those who are still in lockdown to adopt a pet.
Yeah, that's actually a good idea.
Yeah. What is that face?
And I was thinking about it. I was like, no, seriously. And then I realized,
yeah, to adopt a pet or get a really pretty plant that needs a lot of attending, you know?
Yeah, lily plant.
Exactly. It keeps you busy and engaged, and it makes you feel productive to see life growth within your threshold. See life grow. Thank you for being with us on today's episode of Back to Reality. Wherever you guys are, we are sending you positive energy, love and care and prayers so that we can, inshallah, make it through this state of pandemic and come out of it alive. Or if we die, may our afterlife be beautiful and peaceful. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
I am what I am because you made. I have what I have. My love is strong because you are the one I call creator. My Alpha and Omega, my protector and my maker. Because of you, I am braver, my defender and my savior, my giver and my taker. Abiding in silence with patience and guidance, aware when I need you, the light when I seek you, justice, forgiveness, the strength in my love, my love is strong. Because you are the one I call creator, my Alpha and Omega, my protector and my maker. Because of you.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 49 meters, 7,300 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.